From the land of Grandview University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of March, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Ben Brown from Missouri Extension will be here to explore tomorrow's USDA grain stocks report, both for corn and soybeans, and Don Day will join us from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take a look at the forecast on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn settled 7.5 cents lower today at $5.39 a bushel. The July at $5.22 down 8.75, and December corn 8.75 lower as well. It finished at $4.52. May soybeans $13.66 down 26.25. July at $13.57 27.5 lower, and November at $11.86 down 18.25 for the afternoon. Wayne Nelson now joins us from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. What'd you make of the trade today, Wayne?
Well, it wasn't the regular turnaround Tuesday. I wanted to turn around, quit looking at the screen. But I think that we just saw a lot of the farmers have just sort of buried their heads and said, I'm not going to sell anymore right now. And they aren't going to buy anymore because they're holding on to what they got in the bins at home. And I think that we saw some of the fund managers deciding, hey, I want to bank the end of the quarter profits. I want to, be out of here before the report tomorrow. And there just wasn't anybody to pick up the buy wand and say, hey, we're going to stop this right here. So, we did see some end user buying, but all in all, it was sort of a light volume sell-off. And we'll see the numbers tomorrow to see whether it was right or not.
Yeah, those are at 11 o'clock. So let's explore this very quickly. So what you're telling me is that there wasn't much in the way of the other side to meet these particular sales, both on corn and soybeans, probably into the week, into the quarter, into the month, evening up. That's not as bad as maybe it sounds when you hear the numbers from the CME group.
No, I mean, basically along the way, we did see some somewhat big selling, but it would have been met with end users and some other speculators along the way had it not been the big report tomorrow. And the idea that, hey, we keep hearing we're short of stocks, we aren't going to do this, we might not be able to switch enough acres to have enough production to build our carry out and everything along the way that way. So, I mean, how many acres is the government going to say we're going to plant to corn and how many to beans tomorrow? We think the corn number is going to be fairly big for acreage, but we also think that we're going to see some good planting early here. I was talking to somebody in northern Illinois this morning. They were saying, boy, we're going to be planting in dry dirt. And I says, well, over here, we got to wait for the mud to dry before we can plant. So just very different in the areas that way. But it does look, if you look at the weather forecast, that we're going to have some good chances to get the crop in the ground this spring.
And it sure looks like we'll be off to a quick start across a large part of the growing regions. Although the southern areas have been really wet, they may be delayed a bit longer. Here in the Midwest, things do appear to be in pretty good shape, with the exceptions of some parts of North Dakota, maybe a little South Dakota, parts of Minnesota. So looks like a good start there. Did freeing up the big boat, the Ever Given, make any difference to the marketplace at all?
Oh, I think it did. I think that we were looking at we're getting things. They're still going to take 10 days, I think they said, to straighten up that mess down there and the backlog and keeping things going that way. But, boy, if that hadn't got freed up here now and it took another week to do it, that would really messed up the world trade. And just its delivery points and times and what's going on. They were saying this was even affecting the California ports as it was here because of the containers that aren't getting back and everything that's going on along those lines. So that was a very, very big deal. Billions and billions of dollars changed different ways than how they would have went because of it.
Yeah, supply chain issues, that's the big deal that we've had over the last year, and I guess it's going to continue for a while.
Yes.
Hey, thank you so much. We look forward to talking with you next week, and we'll have a new set of numbers in hand by then.
All righty. Thanks a lot, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Ben Brown from FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research and Institute on the University of Missouri campus and with Extension there in Columbia now joins us to talk about a couple of articles he's penned for the Farm Doc Daily website. They're up there now. You can look for them last week and this week both, but they pertain to the grain stocks report that's due out tomorrow at 11 a.m. By the way, you can see those numbers on our website at willag.org, willag.org at that time. Thanks, Ben, for writing the articles. I'm wondering if you can start with the soybean stocks figures and how you calculated it and what you think it might look like.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on, Todd. I really appreciate it. You know, now that we've got the ship floated across the pond, that we can now start focusing on some other things too. And for me, the March stocks and prospective plannings report day that comes out the last day of March, to me, is the second biggest report day of the year, only behind the January production report. And I know other people would disagree and say that the acreage report and third quarter stocks that come out the end of June is more important. But you got to have somewhere to start from, a reference point. And that's what the March date does for us. It provides us with a reference point and gives us a great understanding, or really gives us the understanding of what first half of the year, of the marketing year, corn and soybean use was for feed and seed and stuff like that. So I think the March report is a big day. And given how tight our projected stocks to use ratios are, you know, the tightest stocks to use ratio we've seen in soybeans ever, and a really, really tight corn stocks report as well, or snug. I'm going to call it snug, corn stocks to use number. You know, any big changes to the stocks number is going to have a big market impact tomorrow. And I've really encouraged people not to overlook the stocks report in lieu of the planning report, you know, turning just to the planning report, which, by the way, you know, to me, the big number on the planning report is 182.5 million acres of combined corn and soybeans. Anything over 182.5 is just going to be, you know, amazing of combined corn and soybean acres. Anything under that is really going to be very supportive to the markets as well. And Grant, we can talk about the splits there. But on the soybean side, you know, basically the reports that Carl Zuloff and I wrote really just walk through the balance sheet and give an understanding of where we think corn or soybean and corn stocks are going to be as of March 1st. So, you know, as of the beginning of the month. And, you know, the big stories for both, you know, corn and soybeans is the export number. You know, I think those have been very supportive of the prices we've seen. And certainly if you look through the reports, it shows up much stronger in the soybean stocks report than on the corn side. We've seen impressive sales of corn to China and other places, but they really haven't turned into export inspections. When we look at the soybean side specifically, China was our import inspections to China through the first week of March. Again, that's the day that the stocks report's based on. We're 195% above the same week the year prior, and so, you know, that's basically 1.3 billion versus 450 million bushels. So the export number for soybeans has been very impressive and certainly is supportive. And so, you know, you look at this first half and even the second quarter, and our estimate is for about 874 million bushels of soybeans shipped during the second quarter. Domestic crush for soybeans has been really strong. You and I have talked about this a lot. You know, the February number. So again, the quarter is December, January, February. And so, you know, December and January were strong. We got to February and you know, it really slacked off due to that cold spout, right? We couldn't get the facilities running. Also, natural gas to power those facilities was also spiking due to the need for energy during that time period. So, you know, it was not surprising to see a February report for soybean crush come down the way it did. And so, but still, we've got a great second quarter crush number of 555 million bushels, which is 1% higher than it was a year ago. That soybean, or excuse me, the export number is 73% for the quarter above a year ago. So again, a really strong quarter. You look at total consumption and total use for the second quarter, and we estimate it to be about 40% above the second quarter a year ago, and roughly about 400 million bushels above the five-year average. So, I mean, really strong, robust use in the second quarter for soybeans. And as a result, you know, we're getting a March 1 soybean stocks number that's roughly 1.53 billion bushels for what we estimate to be the March stocks. And that's not very far off from what the trade's expecting. I think we're 10 million bushels higher than what the average trade guess was for the period. So well within the range of expectations and certainly supportive of soybean prices.
Yeah, and by comparison to last year, which is 2.255 billion bushels, this is a big drop.
Oh yeah, and we've had much smaller March 1st stocks reports. I don't want people to look at that and say, "Wow, we're running out of beans." And we've had tight stocks reports. You know, it's really the usage during the first half is always so strong that it really drives, you know, the usage for the year. Now, Grant, we're going to continue to crush, and certainly our domestic crush facilities are going to have to compete with higher prices to get the soybeans to feed their plants. And certainly we're expecting higher imports in the back half of the year as domestic producers are looking for cheap beans from South America. That was kind of the interesting thing that caught me you know, a little bit by surprise, Todd. And then after I thought about it, I was like, oh, this makes totally sense. But imports of soybeans to the United States, granted, they're small. I mean, we're talking about 3 million bushels during the quarter and only like 7 million bushels through the whole first half of the year, which is you know, just not a lot when we're talking about billions of bushels. But you know, we were way down in the amount of soybeans we imported in the country, and I was kind of surprised at that at first. And I thought, well, no one else had beans. I mean, there was nowhere else in the world that could send us beans during the first half of the year. Now that South American production's coming online and we're seeing ships arrive in China and Brazil's loading out beans, you know, we do expect some pretty strong soybean imports, about 20 million bushels in the second half of the year as those domestic processors are looking for beans to feed their facilities. So, you know, good first half of the year, a great first half of the year if you want to look at it that way. You know, but we're expecting higher prices in the back half and just lack of available beans to really kind of shrink that consumption category. And that's, again, soybeans are very seasonal because of the way we export beans. About 90% of our beans that we expected to export were already shipped by the first week of March. So
if your grain stocks number comes in at 1.53 billion bushels and there are 20 million bushels of imports between now and the end of the marketing year, by the time we get to September, does that still mean there are 120 million bushels left over?
120 million, yeah. Yeah, so I certainly think I've been at 115 for a little while now. It was interesting. The other day I got asked what my stocks estimate was all the way back in September. And I was at 315, I think, at the time when USDA was at 420. And you know, I'm still a little bit lower, but we've gotten a lot closer. And I think part of that reason is that, you know, we kind of have an expectation of what we're going to crush just because those facilities continue to run. And so we kind of know what we're going to crush. And I think we're getting really close to the end of our soybean export window. I know there's a lot of soybeans still on the books, especially to China and other places that are on the books. But you look at the export inspections for soybeans the last couple of weeks, and they haven't taken any. And the reason for that is purely economics, right? They can get beans from South America cheaper than what they can get from the United States. So if we do see those soybeans that are on the books actually turn into soybean inspections here in the United States, it's going to come at the very end of our marketing year when some of our crop, maybe some early season beans, are becoming available here in the United States and we can export those. But I think we're getting really close to having, you know, just, you know, the majority of the beans that we're going to ship already being shipped. So
what's your corn number look like?
Ah, yeah, let's talk about corn. So corn could be the interesting one tomorrow, just from the standpoint that USDA made some interesting revisions in what is the December 1st stocks report. Now, it always comes out in January with the production report. But the interesting thing, and I think we've talked about this on here before, Todd, is, you know, the stocks number was not only representing the lower production numbers that we saw in 2020, which USDA made that big revision in yield, a 3.8 bushel revision in the national average corn yield. And that was partially represented in that lower stocks number. But that lower stocks number was also very supportive of very strong feed and residual use during the first quarter. And then yet USDA lowered their ending number for feed and residual use for the total year. So, you know, there's always, I guess, some wiggle room, I guess, if you want to call it that, in the corn stocks number, just for how big the size of the feed and residual use category is. And certainly if we have these big adjustments in stocks, it almost always comes out of the feed and residual use category. And at this point of the year in March, USDA can go back and revise their December 1st stocks report. They do not revise their production report for 2020 at this time of the year. So if we see a stocks number that looks weird, you know, my expectation is that USDA will revise their December 1 stocks report, which, again, these are based on producer surveys, and they do, you know, the analysis to get an accurate, you know, as accurate of a number as possible. But I would not be surprised to see a December 1st stocks report just representing that maybe there was more bushels on hand than what we thought, or they're going to have to adjust that feed and residual use number. Because again, it suggested that there was more use for feed and residual than what USDA is currently expecting. These stocks revisions are not uncommon. They've become more common as of recently, and they've started to become bigger. Now, granted, in our report we took the December 1st stocks report at its face value, assuming that that stays the case. Looking at the trade guesses, I can basically estimate out that a lot of the industry analysts are expecting some type of revision in the stocks report as well, that then also, you know, impacts their ending number. But, you know, we can break this down the list. Again, I talked about we've seen strong sales of corn. And you know, now we're starting to see those import inspections. I think in the last 6 weeks, I think four of the last 6 weeks have all showed up in the top 10 all-time corn export inspection weeks. So we are exporting corn, and I want that to be known. But those have come since the first of the month, and this report estimates corn stocks as of March 1. And up until that point, you know, we just hadn't seen those sales get turned into export inspections like we have in the last couple of weeks. And so, you know, we've got a number for corn exports of about 609 million bushels in the second quarter. That's up from the first quarter of 445 million bushels, for a total of the first half being just over a billion bushels of corn exports. And again, that's probably not surprising given how many beans we were shipping in that first quarter, that now we're starting to see some of those corn shipments get turned into actual export and shipments. The same thing that I talked about on soybean crush applies to corn ethanol. You know, it has struggled at points recovering back to pre-pandemic levels. It's actually, you know, hasn't gotten there, but we've certainly seen some weeks where it's provided some bright spots for the corn picture in terms of corn crush. But February was just a killer almost. I don't want to call it a killer because we're still crushing corn, but you know, we saw a big drop off in corn crush for ethanol in February. Again, that cold spell really shut down some of those processing facilities. And so for a corn ethanol number, for food seed industry, which includes ethanol, we've got a second quarter consumption number of 1.36 billion bushels. And so, again, that's not as strong as what it's been in the past, but ethanol hasn't been at the levels that we've seen last year as it relates to, you know, just motor consumption and using ethanol in motor gasoline. And so we'll have to keep that one in mind when we're looking at these. And then the big number that I've already talked about a little bit is that feed, seed, and residual use category for corn. Again, this is a category that we assume is mostly corn or mostly feed, but it does include the bigger the crop, the more likely it is for it to get lost in space, or you know, get rot or whatever. So the residual use number grows when we have bigger crops. But I think, you know, we've got a number that's 1.4 billion bushels. That's assuming that the first half of the marketing year, you know, was about 71 to 73% of total feed and residual used for the year. And so, you know, I feel pretty good about that. I think we did use a lot of corn for feed, given, you know, the prices of other products. And I think we did see some feed wheat get mixed into rations, but dry distillers grains have remained elevated. You look at wheat prices, and wheat prices have increased. Grain sorghum has certainly, you know, gone up comparable to corn as a competing good. So I think we did feed corn, and given the hogs report that we saw, and you know, it was very bullish because we didn't have as many hogs as what we thought, or future hogs is what we thought. But I still think we used quite a bit of feed, and so in total, you know, we get to a second quarter consumption of almost 3.4 billion bushels used during the second quarter of the marketing year. And that leaves us with a March 1st stocks report of just under 8 billion bushels on hand. Now, I think it'll be interesting tomorrow to see the split between on-farm and off-farm stocks. But certainly, you know, we've got a number that's 7.95 billion bushels. That's only 7 million bushels less than a year ago. And at first, that seems surprising, given that the annual ending stocks number is 417 million bushels below last year. But I like to remind folks that at March 1st of last year, we were just really starting to get into the COVID disruptions. And certainly, we saw ethanol falter in the back half of the marketing year last year, increasing our ending stocks last year. And I like to also put it in perspective, you know, we basically lost an entire Ohio corn crop from the disruptions in the ethanol market, and that increased our ending stocks. So that's why the March 1st stocks, or at least our estimate for March 1st stocks reports, are really close to what they were a year ago. But the annual number is 417 million bushels less.
Can I have you explain one more thing to me again?
Absolutely.
That you already talked about. The December 1 grain stocks, if they adjust it, you think it will be adjusted upward?
Well, so I think it could go both ways. And this is my two-handed economist. I can make a case for either way, right? You look at what that stocks report and that number was, and you sit there and go, it has to be that we either had a smaller crop, given how many stocks we had on hand, which they did make a revision, or, you know, we have to increase feed and residual use, because again, that was just too small of a number, or, you know, the implied feed and residual use was higher than what it normally is, which would suggest that the soybean or the corn stocks number was actually lower than what it was. But on the other hand, you know, if you make the revisions to the production number, you could take those corn stocks, those December 1 corn stocks, down. Again, that would be supportive of consumption during the first half of the year, and maybe the crop wasn't as big as what it was. You know, it was even after the revision down, the 3.8 bushels per acre. Even after you take that production out, you know, you can even say, okay, well, maybe this crop was even smaller than that, and shrink it a little bit. Now, that revision, if it happens, won't happen till the end of the marketing year. That's the next chance that USDA can revise that production number for last year. But they do hold the right to revise the previous stocks report. And so, you know, it's, again, these have become common and you know, they're growing in size, but it would not surprise me to see them revise the corn stocks number. And I think they revise it up, is where I think it comes in. So that's my bias, but certainly we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Hey, thank you.
Yep.
Ben Brown is an agricultural economist at the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri in Columbia and works with Extension. You can learn more about tomorrow's USDA reports on our website at willag.org. And at 11 a.m., we'll post the latest numbers to the website. Don Day is now here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, to discuss the weather forecast. It's been beautiful here, Don. I even mowed the yard yesterday, and it looks great. What do weather conditions look like across the United States for the growing season and the beginning of planting?
Well, I tell you, very spring-like. We are going to see a broad area of high pressure this weekend that's going to go almost coast to coast, and this is going to lead to some very mild temperatures in many areas. Now, short term, over the next few days here, a lot of the Corn Belt, central United States, is going to generally be dry with these warmer temperatures. We will see Wednesday night into Thursday and Friday rain in areas where they don't want anymore. Looks like parts of Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, and then up into eastern areas of Ohio. But the Tennessee area in particular that got over 10 inches of rain over the past week, they're going to get more rain. That's the wet area. But at least over the next 4 to 5 days, many other areas are going to experience a warmer, drier trend. Rain chances do move back into the Midwest and Corn Belt early next week, maybe as we get into late Monday and Tuesday, as some showers and thunderstorms will move in. Doesn't look like anything major, though.
dry conditions in parts of North Dakota, Red River Valley on to the west. Although I think South Dakota, part of Minnesota and Iowa are all good, right?
Well, they're better. There are still some areas in western Iowa that are still showing a soil moisture deficit. But those Dakotas, especially North Dakota, parts of northern South Dakota, and the western areas of Minnesota still are looking dry. And over the next week to 10 days, those trends will continue. So it's kind of a situation where we've had islands of wetness surrounded by dryness, and those drier areas are still being very stubborn.
We'll check in with you again next week.
Talk to you then.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org. You can find and listen to our agricultural programming anytime you like. And tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Central Time, you'll see posted there through my Twitter feed, or you can just follow me at Commodity Week on Twitter, the results of the survey USDA did of farmers, about 80,000 of them, wondering just exactly what they'll plant this season in terms of acreage to each crop. That's called the Prospective Plantings Report. Grain stocks numbers will be there as well at willag.org.